Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Well, we're going to be in some uncomfortable waters here today as I walk through a couple of things going on out there. And one of them is this whole notion of toxic masculinity. Did you hear about the Gillette ad? Welcome to the show. This is Steve Noble. Great to be with you. If you want to join us in the studio right now, live from 4 to 5 p.m. Eastern time, Monday through Friday, is the live broadcast of the show. Some of you hear a tape delay. But if you want to join us live in the studio, we're on Facebook Live just about every day. We're on the radio. So go to Facebook in the search box. Just put Steve Noble, N-O-B-L-E, show, and you'll jump right over. Please like the page and then hit the little play button on the screen. And you'll be with us right here in the studio. So today going to talk about this toxic masculinity, which that kind of notion has been around for a while. Most men are portrayed as buffoons, especially on television. And then recently, just last week, the American Psychological Association released some guidelines slamming traditional masculinity, otherwise known as toxic masculinity. Traditional masculinity ideology helps limit male psychological development, constrain their behavior, result in gender role strain and gender role conflict, and negatively influence mental and physical health. So what is that, traditional masculinity? Well, you know, barbecuing, flannel. You like to play with guns when you're a kid or perhaps when you get older and you notice women and stuff like that. That's traditional, now toxic masculinity. So the Gillette ad, Procter & Gamble, rolling the dice a little bit here. And back in the, what was it, in the fall when Nike did the ad with Colin Kaepernick, remember that? And everybody kind of went ballistic. I can't believe, you know, stand for something or you fall for anything, that kind of thing. But their sales went up. That was good for Nike. Remember, any PR is good PR. It doesn't matter if it's negative, especially, you know, that's why people, these big stars, when they have something blow up on social media or a sex tape or whatever, it's embarrassing and nasty at first. But their Instagram following goes up and the amount of people following them on Twitter goes up. And so any PR is good PR. And we'll see what happens with Gillette. So they run this ad online only, kind of going to the heart of this, the best a man can get, which has been kind of Gillette's tagline for years, really decades. And so I'm going to play that for you. This doesn't cross over perfectly for radio, but I want you to hear kind of the drama, the presentation of it. And then we're going to pick it apart and talk about what they're doing here as traditional roles, traditional anything is under attack, including traditional masculinity, which has now been relabeled as toxic masculinity. So this is Procter & Gamble. This is Gillette. So this is shaving stuff for men. And then they're casting a pretty wide net here. And here's where a really healthy, robust Christian worldview comes into play. And it's easy, like if you go listen to Ben Shapiro or Matt Walsh, a bunch of other people on the right, going really ballistic about this. It's kind of the outrage culture that we're in, going ballistic about it. There are some truths and half-truths here and there. Some things that are decent here and there. But you have to parse through that. But largely, is that what they're trying to do? Is they're trying to promote some decent things? I think that's part of it here and there. But while doing so, they kind of throw the whole notion of masculinity under the bus. So I want to play this for you, and I want you to kind of check this out and listen to how it's presented. And then I'll come back, and we'll pull it apart, and we'll spend the first half of the show doing that. And then we're going to talk about this kind of a new thing that's not so new with respect to man's sinfulness and fallenness and what's been going on for several decades now, but rapid-onset gender dysphoria, which I'm mostly talking about because if you have sons and daughters or grandsons and granddaughters, especially daughters and granddaughters, this is something that's happening. It's real. Most of the evidence right now is anecdotal, but it's serious. And we need to be paying attention to that and be educated so we're ready ourselves as parents and as grandparents and as Christians. So we'll get to that also. But here's the little video, and you'll catch the audio from Gillette dealing with basically toxic masculinity in light of the Me Too movement.
Bullying.
The Me Too movement against sexual harassment.
Toxic masculinity.
Is this the best a man can get? Is it? We can't hide from it.
sexual harassment is taking over.
It's been going on far too long. We can't laugh it off.
Who's the daddy?
What I actually think she's trying to say.
Making the same old excuses.
Boys will be boys.
Boys will be boys.
Boys will be boys.
But something finally changed.
Allegations regarding sexual assault and sexual harassment.
But she says she's
a lot. And there will be no going back. Because we believe in the best in men.
Men need to hold other men accountable.
Smile, sweetie.
Come on.
To say the right thing. To act the right way.
Bro, not cool.
Some already are. In ways big.
Yo, men, we're everywhere.
And small.
I am strong.
But some is not enough.
That's not how we treat each other, okay?
Okay.
Because the boys watching today will be the men of tomorrow.
Okay, I'm going to walk you through this because you need to understand the visuals. If you haven't seen it, we just shared the link on Facebook Live. If you haven't seen it, you should go watch it because this is really indicative of something going on in the culture. And is Gillette just doing this because any PR is good PR? Perhaps. They have a stated reason behind it, which I'll share with you, that they're talking about wanting to do what they can to help the culture for men and masculinity, yada, yada. This is all in response to Me Too, okay? So you gotta think along those lines in response to Me Too and far too many men, and this thing would make you think it's the majority of men are just animals, really, essentially, and horrible people, and just stand by and then don't do much. And of course, finally, because of the Me Too movement, we're finally dealing with this massive problem. And I would never say to you or anyone that there is not a problem. Of course, there's a problem. How big is it? How wide is it? How prominent is it? It depends on the person, depends on the circumstances, depends on what arena you're talking about. But this paints a really, really broad picture with a really, really wide brush. And that's why we got to apply some clear-headed thinking to it, and especially thinking as Christians. So this whole thing, as it unpacks, when you first start, it's really bullying. It's showing some bullying, which we should all be against. It's showing online bullying, okay, which we should all be against. And then it's catcalls, and it's showing a guy in a sitcom who the maid's cleaning, and he kind of comes up behind her and grabs her fanny, and then, you know, ha, 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 the crowd's laughing. Sexualized men and women on the screen and three teen boys on a couch watching that just kind of blindly like little robots being programmed. So I'm going to unpack that. We'll talk about this thing from Gillette because it's blowing up all over the place, and then we'll move on from there. This is Steve Noble. We'll be right back. Welcome back from one toxic male to another. You happen to be a man that, you know, wears vinyl, barbecues, stuff like that. Notices women, you might be a toxic male, and that's out there. And so we're talking about this thing that's all over the internet right now. Gillette just put this out. This is internet only. It's not showing up on TV or whatever, but it's on cable TV. But it's internet only. And Gillette, we played the commercial. We played the audio. We actually, for our friends on Facebook during the commercial break, we played for you the actual video so you could watch that yourself. So here's what they do. They open it up, and there's bullying and online bullying. We should all be against that. And then there's catcalls, you know, an old cartoon of people making catcalls, you know, woo, woo, they, you know, look at the babe walking by. And the accusation here, kind of the picture they portray is that this is normal. This is what your average man in the American context is like. Okay, this is what we're like. So you get that. And then there's a sitcom guy, and he walks up behind the maid who happens to be black. Somebody mentioned this. Why are all the bad guys in this video white? Well, that should be pretty obvious, because if you made one of the bad guys in the video black, now you got to deal with that. So they're steering clear of that. I mean, I'm making that assumption. So the white homeowner in the sitcom, which looks like a fake sitcom, grabs her butt, right? So typical man. And then the boardroom, there's boardroom condescension, and there's a gal sitting there, a female executive, and it looks like she just got done speaking, and the man standing up is like, well, what I think she's really trying to say is super condescending. Like just about every man condescends to every woman in the corporate world. So you got that. Little boys fighting in the yard at a cookout, and that's when one guy says, boys will be boys, and then you got 17-plus men. Each one lined up, standing behind a little barbecue, right? Each one of them has a barbecue in front of them, which is just classic. All these knuckleheads, Neanderthal knuckle-draggers with their barbecue, because that's what idiots do. Idiot men sit around and barbecue meat and watch football. And they all start like one right after another. It's like Pink Floyd, another brick in the wall. And they're all chanting, boys will be boys, boys will be boys. Then there's sexual harassment, sexual assault news, which we should all be paying attention. That's real. We sweep that under the rug far too much, even in the church. So again, there's parts of this are truthful. A lot of this, most of this, is painting with a broad brush and just kind of slamming masculinity in men in general. Smile, sweetie, at the pool. And so now you've got men that are pushing back. So one guy looks across the pool at a girl and says, hey, smile, sweetie. And the other guy's like, hey, bro, knock that off. Okay. Like, that's necessarily wrong. And then another guy, this good-looking girl's walking down the street, and a guy in a storefront checks her out, and he's like, whoa, and he steps out like he's going to follow her, and some other dude grabs him and goes, not cool, dude, not cool, stops him. And then there's the bully scene and a father and son walking down the street and this little kid being chased by the bullies and the father and the little boy. The father goes across the street and stops it as if that's rare that any man would stop a bully. That's kind of the picture that it's portraying, right? Boys watching today will be the men of tomorrow. So that's the message from Gillette, which is Procter & Gamble. So here's an interesting article. This was in the Wall Street Journal. Gillette, the Procter & Gamble brand, for 3 decades has used the tagline, the best a man can get, is building a new campaign around the Me Too movement. The video is sad and depressing while putting all men in a bad light, one Twitter user wrote. Now, if you're on Twitter and you write something, you can get the news. Men aren't just waking up to the bad things that are going on now. There have always been good men. Bad ones too, yes, but the same can be said about women. Could you imagine? Some women are slutty. Some women are lazy. Some women, you would never get away with that. That would go bad. The new Gillette ad was meant to inspire positive behavior, but spends too much time exposing the behavior that men have been criticized for, says Susan Cantor, chief executive of branding firm Red Peak. Men are saying we feel marginalized, criticized, and accused rather than feeling inspired, empowered, and encouraged. Procter & Gamble said it had no plans to pull the spot in the face of some negative reaction. Quote, we recognize it's sparking a lot of passionate dialogue. At the same time, it's getting people to stop and think about what it means to be our best selves. Which is the point of the spot, Mr. Bala said. So that's a Procter & Gamble exec, right? The new Gillette ad is risky, said Dean Crutchfield, CEO of branding firm Crutchfield & Partners. It creates a credible, believable, and upfront conversation that takes brutal honesty and tough decisions, he said. As a result, it could appeal to millennials who care about what companies stand for, he said. There's a demand for this, for purpose, for brands to be tackling tough issues in the moment. But the ad could backfire and alienate Gillette's base. Who is Gillette's base? That would be men. Shaving, right? Gillette's base. Mr. Crutchfield cautioned. Does the customer want to be told they're a naughty boy? Are you asking too much of your consumer to be having this conversation with them? So I went to the website that they point you to at the end of this little ad, okay? Bestamancangit.org. So here's some interesting things. You got to read the language. You got to parse this language carefully. Okay, but so this is officially from Gillette and Procter & Gamble. 30 years ago, we launched our Best a Man Can Get tagline. Since then, it has been an aspirational statement reflecting standards that many men strive to achieve. But turn on the news today, and it's easy to believe that men are not at their best. Many find themselves at a crossroads, listen, caught between the past and a new era of masculinity. What does that mean? Because of the Me Too movement. So now it's just common for men to be sexual predators, okay? And you watch that ad, the implication is most men are that way. Back to this note that they put on their website. It's time we acknowledge that brands like ours play a role in influencing culture. Hello? And as a company that encourages men to be their best, what does that mean? Who defines that? We have a responsibility to make sure we are promoting positive, attainable, inclusive, there's some language, and healthy versions of what it means to be a man. So what's a healthy version of what it means to be a man? And that word inclusive is in there. You got to be careful. So now we're blurring lines because if you were operating in the black and white, you're a problem. With that in mind, we have spent the last few months taking a hard look at our past and coming communication and reflecting on the types of men and behaviors we want to celebrate. Wonder what they're trying to do there. Okay, this is all playing into the Me Too movement, which is really using serious issues for women to sell shaving products. That's ultimately one of the things behind this, all right? From today on, Procter & Gamble says, we pledge to actively challenge the stereotypes and expectations of what it means to be a man everywhere you see Gillette. Isn't that what they just did? I think that's what they just did. They're stereotyping men everywhere. and the ads we run, the images we publish to social media, the words we choose, and so much more. As part of the Best Men Can Be campaign, Gillette is committing to donate $1 million per year for the next 3 years to nonprofit organizations executing programs in the United States designed to inspire, educate, and help men of all ages achieve their personal best and become role models for the next generation. So the first one they're starting with is the Boys and Girls Clubs of America, and isn't that nice? So here's some of the more nefarious stuff. This was a I thought this was a pretty good article looking at this by our friend, and he's been on the show once, but I read him a lot, Ben Shapiro. So he comes on and he's writing in the National Review this time. The company ran an online commercial suggesting that the history of American masculinity is rife with sexual harassment, bullying, and cruelty, and that the new masculinity must overcome all of these influences. Now, it's not new to see corporations pursuing accolades from various social groups, monetizing virtue signaling, which is what they're doing. But the bigger question is Gillette right in their assertions about men, manhood in general? The American Psychological Association seems to think so. Last week, it released a new set of guidelines slamming traditional masculinity. According to the APA, traditional masculinity ideology helps limit males' psychological development, constrain their behavior, result in gender role strain and gender role conflict, and negatively influence mental and physical health. They're talking about boys being boys in general. According to the APA, traditionally masculine men have built a system of masculinity around bullying rather than civilizing, around stolidity rather than emotional maturity. Thus, it is the fault of men that young boys are growing up to become toxic males.
Right.
But is this true? That's the number one question we have to ask as followers of Christ in a broken world whenever we're being sold anything, including from some pastors. Is this true? So a little bit more from that article, some more thoughts on that, toxic masculinity and Gillette, and then we'll move on to what in the world is rapid onset gender dysphoria and why does it matter? This is Steve Noble. Okay, gentlemen, are you being the living up to Gillette's idea of what it means to be a real man, a good man? Well, apparently most of us are screwed up and we're objectifying women and we don't care about bullying and we catcall the women and we treat them terribly and they're just a piece of meat. That's kind of what comes across when you watch their new ad that came out on just on the internet, and there's a lot of talk going on and a lot of articles and talk on Rush Limbaugh was talking about it earlier today. Glenn Beck was talking about it earlier today. I'm sure Sean Hannity's probably talking about it right now. And so when the culture's talking about it, I feel compelled myself. Even at first, I was like, there's a couple of good nuggets of truth in here. Men should hold men accountable. We should stand up for the abused. We should stand up. We shouldn't treat women as the lesser as a lesser form of mankind, because they're not. They're made in the image of God, just like a man is, and so they're worthy of dignity and respect and protection. And I say protection, that's toxic masculinity, by the way. To assume a woman needs a man's protection is toxic masculinity. You know what I mean? So the next time you're at the grocery store or the mall or wherever, and you're going in somewhere where there's a door and there's a woman behind you, don't hold the door open. Because if you hold the door open for her, that's toxic masculinity, because you're implying that she does not have the ability to hold the door open for herself, you jerk. And that's kind of what's going on here. And they're responding to the Me Too movement, I think, out of a profit motive, because they're trying to get younger buyers. And one of the things that's happening to Gillette is a bunch of these online companies. Think about that. Think business for a minute. There's the Dollar Shave Club, who's destroying Gillette. So Dollar Shave Club's got a younger buyer because they're online mostly, and they're pushing through Instagram and Twitter and Facebook, so they're getting a younger demographic, and Gillette's getting crushed by that, so they got to appeal to the millennials, and millennials like cause-driven things. And so they respond to it, so they're picking up this cause. But in the meantime, they're alienating a lot of you traditional men as well. So I was reading through some of the responses from Ben Shapiro on this one. So he's asked the question, of course, is it true? If we truly believe that young men are growing up inculcated into a toxic vision of masculinity, is that from too much traditional male influence or too little? Listen to this. This is facts, okay? Thank you, Ben. Today, according to the U.S. Census Bureau, 23% of American children live with a single mother. That percentage has tripled since 1960. As of 2012, 55% of black children and 31% of Hispanic children lived with one parent, predominantly the mom. How about other male influencers? Teachers are predominantly female in the United States, particularly in primary education. According to the National Center for Education Statistics, 76% of public school teachers were female. Over 80% of social workers are female. In other words, more and more young boys lack male influence altogether. This isn't to suggest that toxic male influence doesn't exist. Of course it does. But that toxic male influence has always been generated by peers rather than parents. For decades, we've known that the vast majority of criminals grew up without a father in the home. As of 1987, 70% of inmates grew up in a one-parent home. The Center for Children and Families has reported that 70% of gang members, high school dropouts, teen suicides, teen pregnancies, and teen substance abusers come from single-mother homes. So what do we need more of? Traditional men. If you want to raise a generation of men, this is Ben Shapiro writing, who will treat women well, act as protectors rather than victimizers, and become the bedrock for a stable society, you need more masculinity, not less. In fact, a recent study from Stanford, Harvard, and the Census Bureau found that high levels of father presence in local communities may matter even more than having a father in the home directly. The study explained black boys who grow up in areas with high father presence are also significantly less likely to be incarcerated. We've maligned masculinity as a society because men are likely to do the greatest harm to others. The vast majority of violent criminality comes from males. The vast majority of sexual misconduct comes from males. But we've made a mistake in blaming the presence of males for that issue. It's a massive mistake to blame toxic masculinity rather than recognizing that toxic masculinity is often the result of a death of genuine masculinity, the kind of masculinity that leads men to stick around and father their children in the first place. The alternative to masculine presence is no masculine presence, and lack of masculine presence leads to toxic masculinity, deprive men acting out of hurt and anger. Great points there by Ben Shapiro, and so true, and from a biblical perspective. Men teaching the men leading the men following Christ, who then show other men how to follow Christ, who then act like men, protect their families, protect others, work hard, treat women with dignity and respect, care for them, serve them as Christ loved and served the church. So it's just, again, it's this whole, I think ultimately what's driving Gillette is money. But ultimately, they're also deciding, their leadership is deciding, we're okay blanket statements about men, that most men are scumbags, and especially if you own a grill. So that's out there. That conversation continues in our culture. Okay, this is even more disturbing. When your daughter defies biology, this was in Wall Street Journal, and this whole thing, this new thing called rapid onset gender dysphoria. First, a couple stories to gear you in. This is from the Wall Street Journal article by Abigail Schreier. A reader contacted me under a pseudonym a few months ago. She turned out to be a prominent Southern lawyer with a problem she hoped I'd write about. Her college-age daughter had always been a girly girl and intellectually precocious, but had struggled with anxiety and depression. She liked boys and had boyfriends in high school, but also faced social challenges and often found herself on the outs with cliques. The young woman went off to college, which began, as it often does these days, with an invitation to state her name, sexual orientation, and pronoun. When her anxiety flared during her first semester, she and several of her friends decided their angst had a fashionable cause, gender dysphoria. Within a year, the lawyer's daughter had begun a course of testosterone. Her real drug, the one that hooked her, was the promise of a new identity. A shaved head, boys' clothes, and a new name formed the baptismal waters to a female-to-male rebirth. Speaking of baptismal waters, before I finish the show today, I'll tell you about the Church of England. The Church of England, which is introducing a new baptism style that goes along with this subject. Highly disturbing, to say the least. Here's another story. Jeanette Miller wasn't exactly surprised when her daughter came out as transgender 5 years ago. A feminist who rarely wears makeup or dresses, she brought Rachel up to disregard gender stereotypes. These are not their real names, by the way. As a child, Rachel enjoyed rough and tumble play. As a teenager, she dated a girl. What shocked Miss Miller was her daughter's declaration that she wished to make her body more masculine by taking testosterone and having a mastectomy. She never once had said, "I feel like a boy," says Miss Miller. She loved being a girl. After Miss Miller started to research what a medical transition entailed, she told Rachel that it was fine for her to identify however she wanted, but she would not permit her to take testosterone, some of the effects of which are irreversible, or have quote-unquote top surgery until she was 18. They fought for months. Rachel says it felt almost like a life-or-death situation. Typically, adolescents first show symptoms of gender dysphoria, the clinical term for the distress caused by the feeling that one's body does not match one's gender in childhood. But in the past decade, clinics in Western countries have reported that a growing number of teenagers have started experiencing gender dysphoria during or after puberty. Now, whereas these young adults used to be predominantly male, now they are more likely to be female. In 2009, 41% of the adolescents referred to Britain's Gender Identity Development Service were female. In 2017, 69% were. So there is something going on here, okay, with respect to this notion of rapid onset gender dysphoria. And what's causing it? This is what's so important. Because have you noticed depression, anxiety? It's all over the place now. Cutting, which we don't hear as much about as we did 5 years ago, but that's still out there. But all kinds of anxiety, depression, all kinds of meds going around, right? Especially with young women. But not excluding boys, but especially young women. So Lisa Littman, and this she factors into a bunch of these articles. An assistant professor of behavioral and social sciences at Brown University was curious about what was causing these changes. She had come across reports from parents on online forums describing a new pattern of behavior. Adolescents without a history of childhood gender dysphoria were announcing they were transgendered after a period of immersing themselves in niche websites or after similar announcements from friends. Her study suggests that these children may be grappling with what she calls rapid onset gender dysphoria. For the study, listen to this. It's heartbreaking, but it's out there and it's happening more and more, which is why I wanted to talk about it with you. For the study, Dr. Littman recruited 256 parents of children whose symptoms of gender dysphoria suddenly appeared for the first time in adolescence. Again, usually in the past, it's been when they were young, okay, 7, 8, 9. Now it's happening more in the teen years, when there hasn't been any signs of that previously. These parents, Ms. Miller among them, took part anonymously in an online 90-question survey. Dr. Littman's findings suggest that a process of social and peer contagion, listen to that, just think peer pressure, social and peer contagion may play a role. According to the parents surveyed, 87% of children came out as transgender after spending more time online, after cluster outbreaks of gender dysphoria in friend groups, or both. Man. In a third of the friendship groups, half or more of the individuals came out as transgender. By contrast, just 0.7% of Americans aged between 18 and 24 are transgendered. Most children who came out became more popular as a result. Man. Rachel, Miss Miller's daughter, says that when she told her friends, all of whom she had met online, they congratulated her. It was like, welcome home. Dr. Littman thinks that some adolescents may embrace the idea that they are transgender as a way of coping with symptoms of a different underlying issue. Almost two-thirds of the children had one or more diagnoses of a psychiatric or developmental disorder preceding the onset of gender dysphoria. Nearly half had self-harmed or experienced some trauma. I got a lot more to share on this. It's very important. It's happening more and more. We have to be aware of it. We have to be ready. How broken is society? Incredibly. And it's only getting worse, it seems. This is Steve Noble. We'll be right back. Pretty heavy today. This is Steve Noble on the Steve Noble Show. Thank you for being here. We were talking about Gillette and their kind of anti-toxic masculinity, blah, 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 which is important because of the redefinition of what it means to be a man and the Me Too movement and how do you respond to that. And they paint you know, the male population with a pretty wide brush. So we talked about that first and then moving into a really disturbing thing that's going on now called rapid onset gender dysphoria. Gender dysphoria, you think that your gender doesn't match the body that you were born with. Okay, that's that confusion, part of the brokenness of the world. And now it's gotten more inertia behind it because we've been more accepting of it as just reality. Oh, well, you're in a boy's body, but you identify as a girl. So obviously you're transgendered and you need to do something about that. Okay. I mean, people like Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie, I think they're 7 or 8 year old, was claiming that. And they're okay. And all of a sudden, the 8-year-old's running the house, who has zero wisdom, zero knowledge, zero emotional or mental stability, and we're just going to go down the road with them, which is definitely child abuse, okay? And so it's really, really disturbing. But they're saying gender dysphoria generally starts when kids are young. But now you've got a phenomenon where, based on peer groups and people that are struggling with depression and anxiety in their teens, all of a sudden they come out of nowhere. Parents are shocked, even liberal parents, which is one of the stories I read earlier. Like I knew my daughter, you know, the lesbian thing and everything, and all of a sudden, boom! I should be a man. Like, where did that come from? And this very liberal woman's like, all of a sudden, my daughter wants to take testosterone and have a top surgery, which is a double mastectomy, in order to try to become a man. And ultimately, we know, in order to try to find some wholeness and wellness and acceptance and love, I want to feel good about who I am. It's the broken condition, which is 5,000 years old. There's nothing new there. But it's just taken on a new form, rapid onset gender dysphoria, and it's growing, and that's why we need to talk about it, why I'm including it. So reading from this study, Lisa Littman, who is an assistant professor of behavioral and social sciences, she's the one that kind of found this, interviewing 256 parents and seeing this this trend going on. And a lot of it's on the other side of a trauma or anxiety or depression. And then all of a sudden, transgenderism, well, that's the answer. And then it's being heavily affected by society around them because we're being more and more accepting of that. It's just like, oh, yeah, you know, you were born with a cleft lip. You need the surgery. Oh, you're transgendered. You need to transition. And so this is back to this other Wall Street Journal article. Like other social contagions such as cutting and bulimia, rapid onset gender dysphoria overwhelmingly afflicts girls. But unlike other conditions, this one, though not necessarily its sufferers, gets full support from the medical community. That's what makes this really scary. The standard for dealing with teens who assert they are transgender is affirmative care, immediately granting the patient's stated identity. Because you can't say no to anything anymore, right? Then you're hateful, bigoted, unloving. There are, to be sure, a few dissenters. This idea that we're supposed to do as therapists is to affirm? That's not my job, said psychotherapist Lisa Marciano. If I work with someone who's really suicidal because his wife left him, I don't call his wife up and say, hey, you've got to come back. We don't treat suicide by giving people exactly what they want. But giving in to patients' demands is exactly what most medical professionals do when faced with rapid onset gender dysphoria. Like fashionable and tragic misdiagnoses of the past, this one comes with irreversible physical trauma. Top surgery, a euphemism for double mastectomies, infertility, permanent rounding of facial features or squaring of the jawline, bodily and facial hair that never goes away. I mean, this is going to sound really harsh, but this is serious Frankenstein kind of stuff going on here. Human depravity unleashed via the medical world, the knife and the pill. Planned Parenthood, of course, furnishes testosterone to young women on an informed consent basis without requiring any psychological evaluation. One of the most evil organizations in the history of the world. Student health plans at 86 colleges, including those of nearly every Ivy League school, cover not only cross-sex hormones, but surgery as well. Rapid onset gender dysphoria afflicted adolescents typically suffer anxiety and depression at a different stage of life when confusion is at least as pervasive as fun, and there is everywhere the sense that they ought to be having the times of their lives. I spoke with 18 parents, this is in this article, 14 of them mothers, all articulate, intellectual, educated, and feminist. They burst with pride in their daughters who, until the rapid onset gender dysphoria spell hit, were highly accomplished, usually bound for top universities. Except for two mothers whose daughters have desisted, all insisted on anonymity. They are terrified that their daughters will discover the depth of their descent and cut them off. They are determined to use whatever influence they have left to halt their daughter's next voluntary disfigurement. Nearly every force in society is aligned against these parents. This is so sad. Churches scramble to rewrite their liturgies for greater inclusiveness. I'll tell you about the Church of England here in a minute. Therapists and psychiatrists undermine parental authority with immediate affirmation of teens' self-diagnosis. It's insanity. Campus counselors happily refer students to clinics that dispense hormones on the first visit. Laws against conversion therapy, which purports to cure homosexuality, are on the books in 14 states and the District of Columbia. We just continue to embrace the darkness at greater, greater levels. It's just so disturbing. Rapid onset gender dysphoria. Michael Brown, who's a friend of mine, a friend of the show, great theologian on the radio the hour before me, wrote a great article, Parents You Need to Know About Rapid Onset Gender Dysphoria. Talking about the things that I was just sharing with you. And towards the end, he says, and anyway, he's reading a bunch of stories on a website. After reading the stories on this rapid onset gender dysphoria website, stories which are rightly described as devastating, the mother of a 15-year-old wrote to me, this is Michael Brown saying this, I just learned about rapid onset gender dysphoria. Oh, my word, it's like I'm reading her life. Oh, wow. Those stories are almost our stories to a T. Parents, please be aware and beware. This is very real. It is increasingly pervasive, and it could be coming to your home next. Your kids need your wise, loving, and committed parenting more than ever. So this is happening, and one of the other articles in the doctor, Littman, called it a social contagion. Because guess what? As you endorse things and as you pat things on the back and say, okay, this is fine, this is normal, guess what? You get more of it. Whatever you incentivize, you get more of. That's why we have sales. Whatever you incentivize, you get more of. Now we're incentivizing transgenderism. Feel like you're in the wrong body? Well, There's a pill for that. There's a surgery for that. It's just devastating. From a gospel perspective, it's just the darkness, the lostness in the world, the confusion, the brokenness of the body, the mind, and the spirit. Looking for some answers, but you don't want to turn to God because you don't want to be judged. And so we double down on it. And unfortunately, Romans 1, God gives us over as we reject and reject and reject, and we suppress the truth and replace it with a lie. Which is why the Church of England is not a church anymore, obviously. This is in LifeSite. We'll finish with this. Sorry to be so down. This is reality, though. This is where we live. Church of England introduces baptism-style ceremony for gender transitions. LifeSite News. While the Church of England, the largest Christian denomination in the United Kingdom, is stopping short of calling its newly instituted blessings for transgendered a second baptism, priests are being directed to offer baptism-style ceremonies for those announcing their new sexual identity. Holy cow. In a newly issued pastoral guidance, clergy are being told to call men by their new female names and women by their new male names. The guidance declares, quote, for a trans person to be addressed liturgically by the minister for the first time by their chosen name may be a powerful moment in the service. Baptizing a mental illness, essentially. It should be noted that the giving or adoption of a new name has a long history in the Judeo-Christian tradition as being evidenced from Scripture. Sarai renamed Sarah. Jacob just changed Jacob. They'll change it to Israel. And you change it from Billy to Samantha. Same thing. Scripture points to that, right? Changing names. Saul to Paul. See, it's in Scripture. That's really some sick proof texting going on there. In some Christian circles, for example, it is customary for candidates to adopt an additional or saint's name at their confirmation. There you go. Another name. Name change. No big deal. Clergy are further advised to be respectful of preferred gender pronouns, even if these pronouns do not correspond with reality. Referred to as the affirmation of baptismal faith, the service invites the already christened gender-confused to renew the commitments made in baptism in a public setting and provide space for those who have undergone a major transition to rededicate their life to Jesus Christ now as a man versus a woman or vice versa. For transgendered people who are not yet baptized and who seek entrance to the Church of England, the new guidance describes baptism as the natural liturgical context for recognizing and celebrating their identity, whatever it may be at the time. I added that. Rather than create a new sacrament, the church's bishops are recommending that the already established sacrament of baptism and the affirmation of baptismal vows can be contorted to not only accommodate, but to celebrate gender dysphoria within their church. The guidance issued by the Church of England's House of Bishops on Monday advises pastors to lay hands on the candidates and pray using the candidate's new transgender name. Pastors are also told that the sprinkling of holy water and anointing with oil can be incorporated into the service, you know, because you really got to get behind this. Christian Concerns, Chief Executive Andrea Mancello Williams, a lay member of the church's General Synod, criticized the new guidance, saying it is a continuation of the denomination's, quote, devastating trajectory towards an outright denial of God and his word. Oh, brother, they're already there. The point of baptism is to identify a person with Jesus as to begin a life of following him, continued Williams. Using an affirmation of baptism to celebrate a gender transition turns us upside down by encouraging people to follow their own feelings and live in identities contrary to how God created them. It's not loving to mislead people and wider society into the falsehoods and myths of transgender ideology, says Williams. Why Andrea Williams is still a member of the Church of England, I have no idea. Because it's not a church. So why be a member? Why be a member of the church if it's not a church? If it's that far afield, if there's that much heresy, that much apostasy, get out of there. There's no point in staying. Rapid onset gender dysphoria. Absolutely broken. And again, it's just another manifestation of brokenness in the world, in the body, in the spirit, in the mind. Society doesn't want to turn to God. So we turn to the knife, we turn to testosterone, we turn to the medical profession, which is indeed itself broken. The only answer to all of this, yes, sound science, absolutely, no question about it, but the only answer ultimately is the gospel itself. For people around us are broken. Pray for that, if you pray for anything at all. This is Steve Noble on The Steve Noble Show. God willing, I'll talk to you again real soon. And like my dad always said, this is hard to think.